Jonathan Crowe, welcome back to Sunday Night at the TSO.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Now, this is the time of year where we get to talk about this annual tradition of the TSO heading to Ottawa and Montreal. Are you looking forward to that?
Yeah, that's right. And it's always great to go to different places, to play in different halls. And as an orchestra, it's really nice for us to play the same repertoire maybe a few times in a row. So we have the same program twice in Toronto, and then we get to take it on the road to Ottawa and Montreal. And, you know, we develop over those four concerts. We're able to work on new things. We often have a rehearsal in a new place. So it means that we can rehearse after having played a concert, which is very unusual for us.
That's an interesting angle, actually, because it is quite a go-go-go marathon in the concert season here at home.
Yeah, and in an interesting way, if I'm ever doing a recital tour or a quartet tour, you know, we'll often be on the road for a couple weeks and we'll play, you know, between 5 and 15 concerts of the same repertoire. And in the middle of that, we get to rehearse it and we get to learn from what we've done in concerts. We get to hopefully grow as musicians. Mm-hmm. And so for an orchestra to be able to do that, it's rare for us to be able to take the same repertoire and to get to really, really learn it over a short period of time and make adjustments as we go. And I think we grow as artists. We get to learn what we're doing a little bit more with the piece as we do that.
Now, as I mentioned, this is a bit of a tradition for the TSO to go to Ottawa and Montreal, but you yourself have quite strong relationships with those cities, don't you?
Yeah, I've actually been officially titled concertmasters in both places. I was in Montreal Symphony for 7 years, but for 4 years as concertmaster. And then I spent 1 year in the National Arts Center Orchestra as the principal guest concertmaster during a time that they were doing a search. So it's really nice to go to the home of kind of my friends. You know, these orchestras, they always come up to see us, and I know the venues so well. And so it's a nice kind of like remembrance for me of an earlier time in my life.
Now, it's a great program, as always, that you guys are touring. As you mentioned, Toronto audiences will be able to hear it May 1st and 2nd, but it's the Brahms' first concert program featuring spotlight artist Emily D'Angelo. First, tell us a bit about Emily.
Yeah, Emily is amazing. She's a young singer that I think she went to the University of Toronto, and she's got a huge following in Toronto because people here have almost seen her grow up as an artist. She's got a Deutsche Grammophon recording contract. She's opening the Met next year, I think. Like, she's got a huge career, and her programs are always incredibly unusual and extremely interesting. So she's doing this piece, Energia, which is basically a compilation that she's put together of all kinds of different works, you know, Hildegard von Bingen, Missy Mazzoli, all female composers, that's put together into this suite. And, you know, anybody that knows Emily knows that she's just going to own this work beyond belief. And she's such a force on stage. So we are all just really looking forward to this.
Speaking of forces on stage, the headliner piece is Brahms' Symphony No. 1, which got nicknamed Beethoven's 10th. Not a small moniker there. What is it about this work that earns it this nickname?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great name. It's interesting. I wouldn't have wanted to be Brahms, you know, writing symphonies after Beethoven.
No.
And you can tell that Brahms didn't want to be Brahms trying to write a symphony after Beethoven. It took him years. He didn't write his first until he was in his 40s, I think. And he destroyed all kinds of sketches for earlier symphonies. He just didn't feel like he could write something that would stand up to the legacy of Beethoven. And then, of course, we get this piece. And from the very downbeat of this huge chord, this kind of screaming high note in the strings and the timpani, it's a real statement. He's like, he's proving something here. And then I think the connection that people like to make is the last movement, because the last movement has a kind of hymnal type theme that sounds very much like the opening to Beethoven 9's famous last movement with choir. And somehow you can see him paying homage to the great Beethoven and this kind of earlier symphony, but doing it in his own Brahmsian way. And for me, it's one of my favorite pieces all time. It was actually the first week, I think, that I came to the Toronto Symphony. We did Brahms 1 with Peter Ungen, so it's nice to do it again.
There's more Beethoven on the program when you're in Montreal, the Carillon Overture. I'm always curious, where does this one really sit in the repertoire?
It's interesting. You know, we don't think of Beethoven as an overture writer, right? We think of his symphonies, and we know that there is an opera and there's all kinds of other stuff floating around. And then there's all these different overtures with different names. I think there's like, you know, there's a Fidelio, there's Coriolan, there's three Leonores, and they're all great music is the thing. But because we think of Beethoven and we think of the symphonies, we kind of forget about all these other pieces that he wrote. You know, any other composer, this would be the pinnacle of the career. It'd be the greatest piece ever written. Right. But for Beethoven, it's kind of like, oh, an overture. Okay, that's fun. but it's a great way to start a a program, great way to start a concert, incredibly exciting. Of course, it's Beethoven, so it's visceral and it's really good for the orchestra to be able to get into. And then maybe giving the audience some familiar sounds to start off the concert.
In Toronto and in Ottawa, it won't be the Beethoven Carillon. It's going to be a world premiere by the affiliate composer Allison Jang, who we actually spoke with last week on the program. Very interesting young artist. Tell us a bit about her work, Illumination.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's always interesting when you get a new piece because you never quite know what it's going to be like. You never know when you're going to get it. You never know how much rehearsal time you're going to get, right? I can't imagine being the conductor thinking, well, I've got to put aside a certain amount of time for this, but I actually don't know what the piece is going to be like when I make the schedule. So we're all really excited to get to know Allison through this work. I've done the bowings for it, but it's one of those things that I get to see my part.
Right.
And I don't necessarily see everything else. I can look at the score, but until we all get into the first rehearsal, none of us have ever heard it. And right. So we have an amazing music director who has an idea in his head of how these things should sound. And we go from the beginning with that in mind. But the joy of doing music and of doing new music is that every single concert's different. And so we get to learn it in rehearsal. Allison gets to hear it in rehearsal for the first time and make changes. And in a way, the piece comes to life starting on Monday of that week.
I know for the affiliate composer, or whoever they happen to be at a given time, it's such an exciting thing to work with the TSO and to have a piece of theirs played by this incredible orchestra. I'm wondering what it's like for you all, knowing that you're part of this big moment in a young composer's career.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important. And when you think about writing a piece for solo violin, if you're in the university, there's a very good chance you can kind of hunt down a friend and say, hey, can you play this piece for me? I want to see what it's like. Much less likely that you can get a 96-piece orchestra and say, hey, can you all just kind of find time, maybe Friday night, to read this through and make comments? It's just not going to happen. So I think it's deeply important that as an orchestra, we create new repertoire, right? We have to play these new pieces so that 200 years down the road, history can judge what is going to be the next Rite of Spring. Right. If we didn't play new repertoire, we wouldn't have all of these great pieces that somebody took a chance on. And these great composers who might not be well known at this point in time, but are going to grow and develop and hopefully become the next Beethovens or the next John Williams.
Well, that's super. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great time on tour. Enjoy Brahms, enjoy Emily and all of it.
Thank you so much. Looking forward.